we now proceed to the final case, appeal number 09-1641, Brown versus Ford Motor Company. Ms. LaRue.
May it please the Court, I'm Denise LaRue and I represent the appellant, Letitia Brown, the plaintiff below. Ms. Brown contends that the defendants interfered with her rights under the FMLA, which resulted in the termination of her employment. She's asserting an FMLA interference claim. Consequently, as the employee, she's got to establish five elements. The first is that the employer is covered by FMLA. The second is that she was an FMLA-eligible employee. Those two elements have not been disputed on this during this litigation. The third element is that she is entitled to the leave, that she was off work due to a serious health condition, as that's defined by the FMLA. And in this case, the district court below found that there were genuine issues of material fact and that that issue should go to a jury, and so we're not contesting that on this appeal. The fourth element requires that she establish that sufficient notice of the need for leave was provided to the employer, which then serves as a trigger for the medical certification verification process. And then the fifth element is establishing that the employer interfered with her FMLA rights. Here, the defendants required her to submit her medical certification under a much shorter period than the 15 days that's required under the FMLA. As a result, her employment terminated on September 11, despite the fact that she submitted her medical certification by September 12, which was well within the 15 days FMLA window. As to this element, the district court also found that there were genuine issues of fact, and so we're not challenging that determination on appeal. It's really the fourth element, going back to that fourth element, the notice element. And that actually consists of two prongs. There's the timing prong, and there's also the content of the individual's notice. The in terms of the timing prong, that's really the essence of this appeal, because the district court found that there was material issues of fact in terms of the content of the conversation that took place with respect to the notice she provided on August 30th to Nurse DiGullio. Back to the timing, in terms of the second leave period, which she took, the last leave period she took, the FMLA requirements only require that the employee provide verbal notice sufficient to make the employer aware that the employee needs FMLA leave and the anticipated duration of that leave. In terms of the timing, more specifically, the regulations provide that when the leave is not foreseeable, the employee is expected to give notice of the leave as soon as practicable.
You agree here that the termination was consistent or didn't violate the collective bargaining agreement. There's a collective bargaining agreement that required certain time to be back, 5 days or something, and she did not report back to work during that time. So there was no basis for any relief that she could have sought under the collective bargaining agreement.
In terms of the grievance process, we're looking at this in terms of the employer may have a collective bargaining agreement that provides medical leave and rights, and that kind of exists on this plane. Above that, though, is the FMLA.
Right.
So our focus has always been on, have they violated the FMLA?
All the time that she was out, though, the absences from work that she had were based on the union contract.
Not necessarily. It's a paid medical leave.
Right, but it the forms that she signed said this is not FMLA.
No, let me address that. What happens at this plant is they essentially put blinders on with respect to medical leave for someone's own personal medical leave. If you're going out on intermittent FMLA, they tell you to go to employee relations and open up a leave for intermittent. If you're taking FMLA for family care, you go to employee relations. But if you turn to Appendix 240, this is a form that she received after she took FMLA intermittent leave and was approved. It says in that form, if you're going to be off work for more than 4 days, you go to medical. And that's what happened here. She knew that she was going to be off for 4 days when she initially took the leave. Instead of going to employee relations, she's directed to go to medical. When she goes to medical, all they have in medical are these forms that are checked non-FMLA. That's what happens. It's not as though the employee is given a choice and asked, are you taking FMLA or are you not taking FMLA? All personal medical leaves are handled as though they're medical leave of absence. Now, that's fine. You can call it whatever you want. That doesn't extinguish the fact that if it qualifies for FMLA, then she's entitled to the FMLA protections. And that's what this is all about. The in terms of the timing of the FMLA, that leave is that notice is to be provided to the employer as soon as practicable. And in this situation, the district court originally concluded that notice of her leave was in fact timely and sufficient. They found that when she reported to medical on 8/30, August 30th, that she had met with her doctor and her doctor was extending her leave to September 16th, that was sufficient notice because it occurred within 2 days of her leave extending and a day after she met with Dr. Shute. That was the first time she had ever met with Dr. Shute. On motion for reconsideration, the court reversed itself, however, determining that the trigger date was some date earlier, August 21st. The date that she knew she was going to have a doctor's appointment, but not a date that she knew that she was going to be placed on extended medical leave. In ruling that August 21st was a trigger date for providing notice, it actually eliminated her subsequent leave. In essence, that leave that she found out about on August 29th was eliminated, according to this ruling. And that's penalizing her for knowledge that she could not have had and did not have as of August 21st.
Did she make any mistakes during procedural aspects of it?
Procedural in terms of her medical
requests?
What happened was she thought, and she's been very good, she's been at this plant for a number of years, she thought that she had done the appropriate thing in getting her doctor to cover her for that 1 day, because she knew that she was going to be out that 1 day to see Dr. Shute. It turns out that the doctor filled out the form in an ambiguous manner, saying that her condition extended to August 29th and that she could return back to work on August 29th. So she thought she was covered.
Should the employer follow customary procedures in every case, or they should make exceptions if somebody is a day late or something like that?
Well, I think what's key here is what did she know on the 21st? She knew that she needed a doctor's appointment. Let's say that she had gone into the doctor's office, same facts, gone into the doctor's office, had seen Dr. Shute on August 29th, and he released her. But let's say that she then walked out of the doctor's office and slipped and fell and injured herself to the extent that the doctor decided on that day to take her off work until September 16th. Would that mean that that leave is not covered, it's not FMLA protected? Well, of course not. She didn't foresee that she was going to slip and fall. It's the same situation here. She didn't know on the 21st that the doctor was going to meet with her for an hour, change her medication, and decide to keep her off work for an additional period of time. I see that I'm into my rebuttal, and I'd like to reserve at least a minute. Thank you.
Mr. Millman?
May it please the Court, Timothy S. Millman on behalf of Appalese Ford Motor Company and Automotive Components Holdings, LLC. In this case, the District Court was correct in its conclusion that Ms. Brown cannot maintain an FMLA interference claim because she failed to comply with 29 CFR 825.303A, which required her to give notice to her employer within no more than one or two working days of learning of the need for leave. Here, Ms. Brown learned of the need for additional leave on August 21st. In spite of that knowledge, she did not notify defendants within one or two working days of August 21st, nor did she even notify defendants on or before the last day of her then-existing leave, which expired at the conclusion of August 28th. Instead, she made no contact with defendants until an alleged telephone call on August 30th. By that date, her original leave of absence had already expired, her return to work date of August 29th had already passed, and she was now AWOL. As the District Court ruled, the appellant did not comply with the FMLA notice requirements and therefore did not invoke the protections of the FMLA, and summary judgment was appropriate. What's key here is once she failed to give the timely notice as required and she did not report to work as she had indicated she would on the 29th, defendants were entitled to follow the procedures under the collective bargaining agreement, including the procedures governing the loss of seniority when an employee fails to report to work as scheduled. That took it outside the realm of the FMLA when she failed in the first step, her obligation to give the notice in a timely manner. And once that happened, she set the wheels in motion of the loss of seniority provision and the five-day notice provision under the collective bargaining agreement.
The phone call on the 30th have been enough to satisfy the notice provisions of the FMLA had she not already gone AWOL, to use your client's terminology?
No, because that phone call still would not have been within one or two working days of learning of the need for the leave. And plus, we contended before the district court that the content of the notice was insufficient as well, that merely stating, I need an extension, did not give the reasons for the extension or the reasons for her leave. So we argued in our opening brief to the district court that the content of the notice was also insufficient.
All she knew on the 21st about the need for additional leave beyond that which had already been approved was that one day, because the doctor's appointment couldn't be scheduled within the previously approved leave time. She had no basis for knowing what additional leave time she might need as of the 21st.
That's correct. As of the 21st, she didn't know how long she may be out. She did know that she was not going to be able to report to work as scheduled on the 29th, and she did know that she needed at least one additional day of leave. And the purpose of the notice provisions is to let the employer know the status of the employee so they can adequately schedule the workforce. And here she did not even pick up the phone and call defendants to tell them, I will not be at work on the 29th. And once she failed to do that, she did so at her own peril, and she's well familiar with the collective bargaining agreements and the five-day notices under that.
Are the leaves under the CBA paid leaves?
Paid leaves.
We know under the FMLA it's an unpaid, entitled to an unpaid period of time to be away from work, but the leave that she was under, were those compensated?
My understanding is that she can seek compensation through Unicare, and I believe that she did so during her initial absence. She sought compensation as under some disability benefit policy. I think it's a benefit for employees if they want to seek compensation for the time they're absent. I'm not sure if in the record it reflects.
Getting at just the general idea, if you have a paid sick leave through a collective bargaining agreement, it's to your benefit and keep that going as long as you can before you have to go on an unpaid FMLA leave.
Certainly. And, I mean, there may be reasons why an employee such as appellant may not want to invoke the FMLA and count for 12 weeks of leave in any given year time period. We argued to the district court initially that her initial leave was not FMLA qualifying leave. She had not invoked the FMLA, even though she knew how to do so. So we argued that the first original leave was not FMLA.
She knew how to do so. Employees work at. I mean, her job here is she's an assembly job setter, ball nut, whatever that means. Doesn't sound like a very sophisticated job. How are you supposed to know the differences between collective bargaining leaves and FMLA leaves and all this sort of stuff?
Well, she had taken FMLA leaves in the past, as well as regular medical leaves in the past. So she was familiar with the process. If I may, I would also note that the arguments that the appellant makes in her brief, we contend have been waived because they were not first presented to the district court as grounds for denying summary judgment. I believe in their reply brief on appeal that they essentially conceded that point and just argued that there were circumstances here that would require an exception. We contend that the appellant has not demonstrated exceptional circumstances where justice would demand a departure from this longstanding waiver rule. In her reply brief on appeal, appellant argued that in response to our motion for reconsideration to the district court, she was forced to decide whether to oppose our motion on the merits or to resist it on the applicable standard. She states in the reply brief that she opted to resist it on the applicable standard. We submit that it was not an either-or proposition, that to the extent she had arguments on the merits, she was required to present those to the district court in response to our motion for reconsideration. If there was not sufficient time to do so, she could have sought an extension of time, and she did not. We would submit that merely thinking up new arguments after the fact and after losing the motion on appeal does not qualify as an exceptional circumstance that would allow or suggest that this court should consider these new arguments that appellant is now making. If that were enough, then the longstanding rule providing for waiver would have no teeth.
After the phone call on the 30th, there was a leave form left for her to pick up at the desk in the medical clinic, is that right?
Correct.
That she never came to pick that up to fill it out?
My understanding is in the record reflects that she came on September 6th in the evening to pick up that form. She waited from the 30th to September 6th to even come in and pick up that form, and then she waited until after she was terminated at the end of September 11th, and she heard that she'd been terminated. Well, then on September 12th is when she finally faxed in that form to defendants.
And she didn't pick up the certified mail 5-day termination form either?
Correct. She was sent a certified letter from both the employer as well as from the union, and she picked up neither one of those. And as the record reflects, the union initially filed a grievance on her behalf, but then withdrew that grievance because it lacked merit, because they expressed that she did not follow the employer's customary practices. I have nothing further unless there's more questions for me.
Okay.
Thank you for
it. Mr. Rue, you have another minute.
Let me just address briefly. She has taken leave in the past, but she has not ever been told that if you want to invoke FMLA while you go out on medical leave, that you have to do something different. Again, she's taken FMLA intermittent leave, but in terms of employees going into the medical department, they're given these non-FMLA forms, and the employer is then in a position to claim, oh, well, you didn't ask for FMLA. I also want to say that this is an employee that didn't sit around and not do what she was supposed to do. She went to her doctor's appointment on the 29th, found out that the doctor was going to place her on an extended leave, contacted the medical department the next day to advise them that my doctor has extended my leave out until until 9/16. She went into medical on September 6th to pick up the document. When she found out that her doctor couldn't get her in, this was a new doctor, he required her to come back into the medical office and before he would fill out the form. The earliest she could get that appointment was September 11th. She called in as well. She called in and spoke to a male nurse and advised that male nurse, the earliest I can get in to see my doctor is the 11th. And he told her, okay, then get the form in on time. She got the form in within the 15 days under the FMLA, and we ask that you remand this case for proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is taken under advisement. The court will...